Hello, everyone. I'm Greg Kadulian.
We thank you and welcome for attending the graphic novel creator Richard Kyle Legacy. Richard and I met in 1978 at the early Alpha Chess Comic Con. He was a Korean War combat vet, writer, editor, publisher. He told me many times he was always proud of his layout abilities. And of course, the first graphic novel, Metzger's Time and Beyond, he published. Metzger was, we're pretty sure he was a Vietnam combat pilot.
Metzger absolutely served Vietnam, and we were corresponding through that time. I don't think he went over, he was in the armed forces. I don't think he went overseas. That is my guess.
Well, one sure, I tried that. I asked a lot of people, nobody was really sure. Richard mentored a lot of people in Long Beach in his books first.
As Philier has
said over the years, he would call him the Sheldorf of Long Beach. He helped me out many times for many projects. Your awards, your Sheldorf Best Friend of Fandom Awards, he would help me edit them, as George Clayton Johnson did. So when we got reunited in 2010, he came to a luncheon at Big Jim's restaurant here, George Clayton Johnson's home. He got there late, people were about to leave. He walks in with a big box. It's full of Metzger's Time and Beyond, Mint Condition Wrapped Up, Argosy, and Graphic Star Wars. We went crazy. He signed them for everybody, and nobody was in a rush to go. And he had a stroke about 2.5, 3 years ago, and passed away in December. And he really enjoyed mentoring people. And like many other people in fandom, Kruger, Blake, so there's so many. He helped everybody and expected nothing in return. So I hand it over now to Phil. You will probably work with him more than anyone.
Well, I met Richard when I was 18 in Long Beach State. I went to Long Beach State, and Richard had a bookstore downtown, and I went into the bookstore, and we got to talking, and he talked me into painting his sign immediately on the front of the outside of the store. So really quickly, I became friends with Richard because Richard liked to talk a lot and was very opinionated about everything, comics and science fiction, you know, everything. So I'm 18 years old, so I was absorbing all this stuff. And I met Ron earlier in San Francisco. I went up there in high school. And so I just really, thanks to these guys, I had so many mentors. Thanks to these people, I'm in the comics business. So I really owe my whole ruined life. If I hadn't met these guys, and then I went to the San Diego convention, the first one, it's a nightmare. And I met Mike Ware as well. Richard set up a meeting with Mike Ware. I didn't know Mike, and he said, Jack Kirby needs an inker. You can go ink for Jack Kirby. So I had all these thoughts in my head, like riches, money. I drove up to meet Mike, and Mike was pushing his car down the street. I didn't know Mike. And I saw this guy pushing the car in the driveway, and I knew at that moment, all the dreams of money disappeared. And Mike saw my work. I was 18, and he said, you can draw. Don't take this job. And so I owe my career. I never ate for Jack Kirby because of Mike.
I met Richard in 1965, shortly after I came south from Oregon. And we became good friends, and I became part of a circle of art and comic science fiction fans like the late Rick Durrell. And I was introduced to him by Russ Manning, because they were close friends. But Richard, when he had the store and knew I collected 16mm films, would have an occasional screening in the evening, and I'd run a movie, and he would invite people like, well, that's how I met Dan Spiegel, was when I ran the Seahawk with Errol Flynn. And Richard had such an influence on all of us, but there were some of us that were convinced that his secret unknown career is that he was actually writing those Shel Scott detective novels.
Maggie?
What did you meet
Actually, I think I met him here, when he was here 5 or 6 years ago. I don't think we had met prior to that. But first, met him the way so many fans met each other. It was through Zero. Probably it was 1962. And we obviously shared the interests and so forth and so on. So it was that whole community. So, for example, George Metzger with his incredible letters, illustrated letters through the service and so forth. We were all corresponding with each other. And I think the thing with Richard was the vocabulary, the intelligence, the unusual critical ability just stood out from the very first things that we ever saw that he wrote. So it was with deep admiration, and I believe we even made fun of him at one point in Bill Spicer's magazine because he had talked about television critics and so forth and so on. He says, "You're talking about comic books?" And he goes, "Yeah, I was. Thank you very much." Kind of response.
That picture, he's wearing the sunglasses, standing next to Fillier. He told me everybody thought he was Stan Lee. So he didn't try to convince anybody otherwise. When he came to the luncheon and George Clayton Johnson got the Argosy, this was in 2010, and Argosy, I think, had a publication in what, early 90s? George Clayton Johnson went crazy. He read it and read it and read it. He called me, "Rick, I got a call, Tyler. I got to give you a phone call." Richard told me, had a lot of conversations the last few years he was alive. He said the most thing that he was proud of was his layout ability on all the magazines that he created. And he said to me, it was so weird, I don't know how, if I can paraphrase it a bit close, he goes, "Hell yeah, we had to create the graphic novel because the bookstores were too prejudiced to carry comics."
Yeah. He convinced me to make a graphic novel. I thought it would be the first, but he, 6 months before I put mine out in 77, Richard published his book, so he beat me. But anyway, he was always talking up, we have to get comic books out of the, you know, the format they were in, 50 cents or whatever. He kept saying, we have to do them in hardcover and so forth and for $5. So I did what I consider the first graphic novel. But anyway, it was a year before Will Eisner, but Eisner gets the credit, and I'm happy to give it to him because Will Eisner is much more famous. But since Will Eisner was called the father of the graphic novel, I started saying, well, I'm the godfather of the graphic novel. Sounds much better.
Ron?
I think I met Richard at the World Science Fiction Convention in 72 in L.A. Does anybody remember when that date was?
Yeah, 72.
Yeah, and so here's this guy, and he's got a little store, and I'm peddling my underground comic books, and so we make kind of a connection. And over the years, I mean, a lot of people don't understand why, but as a bookstore person, and he was pretty fastidious as a bookseller, things with staples in them didn't fit in. They were just not part of the culture of bookstores. And we had, bookstores had done a big change. They'd come from hardcover only to this thing called a quality paperback in just a few years before the 70s. And so New York was figuring it out, the center of publishing, and then there was all these upstarts out west. And we had done, but I remember we had occasionally I was all for like, to hell with, you know, having to have a spine on something and making it. I think that our stapled comics would do fine. And the argument always came down to, well, you can't put them in, you know, to the side so that the spine sticks out and you can read what it is. So they're not going to carry them. But we had a distributor called Book People in Berkeley that we began selling our comics through in 1970, and they sold them all over because retailing was changing. But Richard was correct. The graphic novel was definitely to be a force and to come, and he was a great proselytizer about this stuff. And I've always appreciated his vision and his ability to get you into his conversation and get on his side. So.
Let me begin with the term graphic story rather than graphic novel. So Fantasy Illustrated changed its title to the Graphic Story Magazine, if you remember correctly. And so I think that term, for, which was Richard's, preceded the concept of the graphic novel.
Yeah.
Jamie, didn't you do one of the last interviews?
Yes. I was on a Comic Scholar mailing list, and Bob Beerholm was also on there, and he was trying to find who created the term a graphic novel. He was going backwards through his fanzine collection and finally nailed on Richard Kyle and his 1964 Kappa Alpha number 2, where he wrote the column. Appropriately titled The Future of Comics, and that there's where he came up with a graphic novel and the term a graphic story. And then Richard was invited to San Diego in 2011 for their 50 years of fandom. I met him at a panel just like this one, asked him about doing an interview, he agreed, and we did that interview.
Great, and you have that clip.
Yes.
David, can you play that?
Richard told me many times a lot of his favorite artists. I mean, all these people here on the panel.
I know that I read back to the favorite thing I watched because I have memories and snaps of memories about all of these comics from Pioneer Picture Stories and Detective Picture Stories and the early 20 pages
to speak.
God, what are you doing? You worked in his store. Come on.
That's okay. Oh. Go get the microphone there if you want.
LeClaire worked in Rich's store, and Alan Brenner worked in Rich's store. Does anyone know Alan Brenner?
Yeah.
Fill in.
He couldn't make it. I talked to him. I talked to so many people on this panel, but, you know, Giant Comic Con and conflicts, you
like, unlike this, on this, you know, very esteemed panel, I was a kid when I first met Richard Lewis. I was like 11 when I first came to what was then World Wonder World Books.
Yeah.
And I owe it to Phil. He advertised it in Uncle Jam. And Phil, I'm afraid I have to tell you, Richard told me that I was the only regular customer he ever got as a consequence of advertising.
Well, you know, so it's pretty good.
Show in 14 years. So yes, this quantity made up for a quality. But at that time, I didn't know comic book stores existed. And when you're a kid and you come into something like that, there was more comic books I had ever seen in any one place in my life. And it just blew my mind. And it was also the one only time my mother ever set foot in there. But no, Richard, you talk about him being a mentor. I mean, really, other than my mother, he was the person who made me understand that not only are comics fun and something that, you know, has a historical background, but, you know, they are works of art, works of genius. And you talked about the people he really loved, like Steranko, but he also loved Jack Kirby.
He loved
Alex Toth. He loved Orson Welles. I mean, when Richard passed away, he had told me years ago, the three people whose passings had affected him, who weren't his family members, were Humphrey Bogart, Orson Welles, and Jack Kirby. So that gives you an idea of the kind of breadth and depth of his interest. But yeah, I mean, he was just kind of an unacknowledged legislator of this thing we call, you know, comics criticism or comics, like the term philosophy. And, you know, he's probably the most influential person in my life with regard to what comic books are, what they mean, what is important about them, and just, you know, steering me to what this art form is about, you know. So I mean, yeah, I'm gonna go here and blubber, you know, but definitely someone that people should know about. And you know, with a graphic novel and graphic story, I mean, that's just a kind of a tiny bit of why he's important, you know. So I mean, I didn't know about a lot of these things, like the fandom and whatnot. I didn't read some of this stuff until, you know, many years later, because Richard never really talked about it. I mean, you know, he wasn't the type of kind of brag or talk about things about himself. It just kind of came out. And then, as far as I know, Maggie, you did, in fact, serve in Korea. You went overseas. I don't know what, if any, combat you saw, but you talk very little about his military.
Okay, so. I was talking about Metzger.
Oh, Metzger. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Yeah. But, yeah, I think everyone in here, if you remember Richard, you have a story to tell. We could, you know, be here all night. But yeah, I worked for Richard in the late 80s, early 90s, which was, you know, kind of when the comic business started swirling down the toilet. So it was an interesting time in and of itself. And now, you know, conventions like this, obviously, you know, it's movies and TVs and whatnot, but the thing that I think we all, you know, originally fell in love with, comics and science fiction and mysteries, you know, those are the things that interested him, so, you know.
Did you meet a lot of authors at the store?
Yeah, I mean, some of them were obviously doing signings, yeah. You know, so there are people, you know, like Jerry Parnell and Stephen Barnes, and who else did I remember? Tim Powers,
yeah.
James Blaylock. So a lot of really good writers. And sometimes they just came to the store to come to the store, because, I mean, you know, I was all freaked out when Steranko came in there, because, I mean, I knew he was not necessarily knowing all of his work, because, yeah, you know, as a teenager, so I didn't know very much in those days. But, yeah, I'm not going to be a player all the day. But no, Richard, people should know about him. It's not just, you know, Greg Melvin. You know, he just was also just a very kind and ethical man. Let me just leave it at this. When I first was a customer there, he was going to do this promotion where, when, you know, remember they relaunched Superman with John Byrne. They said, Leclerc, do you want to, you know, come out and we're going to sell the, you know, new Superman, kind of like, you know, this back in the day for 10 cents, you know, pick up a good one. So I got off from school and I came there and I said, you know what? Sorry, Leclerc. It kind of fell apart, you know, but I told you that I needed you, so you paid me anyway. So, and it's like, well, okay, I mean, I was stupid, I took the money, but years later when I first worked for him, the very first day I worked for him, he paid me. And I said, Richard, I haven't even started working here. He said, well, you know, if I, like, you know, get hit by a bus, you know, I won't owe you any money. And he says, ah. So he just says, to know that that just is the way that he was, you know. So his word was his bond. He was someone you could rely on. He was someone who was, you know, sensitive to what your situation was. So, yeah, I can't talk enough about him. So, yeah. Thank you.
Well, I met Richard years before the storm, and there was a sort of a mystery about Richard to those of us who knew him. And we all speculated on what he was doing because he would never talk about that. And so my comment earlier is we just all suspected that he was actually Richard Prather who was writing those shells. So that's years before the store. What year did he open the store?
72. Yeah.
So I knew him 7 years before the store. Yeah. And I can't recall all the circumstances, but there were like 6 or 8 or 10 of us in this group, and we'd get together periodically at different people's homes and talk about comics and science fiction, and then when he left the room, try to figure out, what was he doing when we weren't meeting?
Richard was so articulate and intelligent, and you said over there, brought this up a good point. It's great, you know Paul Farmer, for your day, he's great. And but the build-up or presentations you would do, like when we talk about Maggie or Mike Berger, how Mike Berger got Kirby Inker, he was just so articulate, I would feel this new place. Like, I know these people, and I know their talents, but his presentation on his friendships, like, they're really, really super special, you know? And also, I want to introduce David D. Brown. David D. Brown is pretty much relatively new in comics.
Yeah, I'm relatively new to the industry, however. I do, and I didn't get a chance to actually meet him personally, but I have seen his impact on, I've known Phil for years, and when I met Phil, he was doing this workshop on graphic novels, and at the time, I wasn't really familiar with the term graphic novel, but the difference between graphic novels and comic books. I started out doing comic books for kids, and I was working with the Los Angeles Library, Downtown Library, and I got a lot of pushback from institutions that didn't feel like comic books had any quality or value. And through some of my conversations with Phil and some knowledge I gained about the whole concept of a graphic novel, I think it just changed that perception of and it did added value to that medium.
Everybody here is too humble, so let me enlighten you about David. Phil introduced me to him at WonderCon 5 years ago. You meet some of the most unbelievable creative people in the world through Phil. In 2009, he got the NAACP Image Award. He did the first Obama comic book, and now the Obama graphic novels completed. Lots of graphic novels here. Sorry, Ron Turner and Phil. And he's, what, 5, 10 years in coming to Comic-Con?
Yeah, well, actually, more than that. My first Comic-Con was in 1994, I was doing comic books for kids at the time. I had a program that I was doing at the Watchtowers in South Central Los Angeles, and I worked with young people and taught them how to draw and create their own stories, and they were culminating these comic books.
Also, David's a cartoonist for the Los Angeles Sentinel, the oldest African-American newspaper in America. So that's pretty cool, too. Mike, I met in the early 70s. He would have film parties at his home in La Mirada before I met a lot of people. Eric Hoffman, Carl Masick, Wes Manning. And was Richard there, too? I can't remember.
Occasionally.
But what would happen? I'd have a 16-millimeter phone and play Star Trek or whatever. And I would tell this to Connell, the story. I said, you know, at these parties, Mike had the dialogue to every Star Trek episode memorized. And all of a sudden, this famous artist who went from Star Trek, before they speak, he starts doing the dialogue.
Wow. Well, in those days, there was this interesting group in Southern California. You know, we talked comics, literature,
Westerns.
You know, science fiction, everything under the sun, and we would watch movies together.
Right.
And those were great times.
Yeah.
And me and Mike would have political conversations with Wes Manning, and we never agreed. But there was no fighting or killing each other. You know, you could talk about anything, and it was awful.
I'm wondering whether this is maybe a facet of urban fandoms. Very similar situation in Cleveland. So we had Ben Jason, we had Marlon Ellison, we had a film group that where the guy was a film collector, so we would sit down in the evening and watch all 12 chapters of The Adventures of Captain Marvel, that sort of thing. And obviously there were groups in New York, the Futurians and so forth. Do you have to be urban to have this sort of experience? It's occurring to me to wonder. Because this just sounds exactly like what we were doing.
Didn't Harlan Ellison come to the store?
I don't remember seeing Harlan Ellison. So.
Maybe by then he didn't
maybe
come.
Earlier,
yeah, I think earlier he came. Harlan's the character.
Oh, Mike has one of the best Harlan Ellison stories in the world. He had to tell him privately, I think.
Nonsense. This is where we talk about it.
Yes, Phoenix? Fred Patton story. And of course, Fred Patton, you know, paralyzed on account of us going for Fred, my partner. But he wrote a beautiful piece that I sent to everybody. Yeah. And if anybody wants it, just friend me on Facebook. And it's amazing in the comics fandom and comics industry how it's like literally 0 degrees of separation, how people compliment each other, and essentially their love and friendship and respect for each other. Basically mentoring, you're learning, hey, this person go here. And the thing you did in comics fandom from the very beginning, I remember like people like Rory and Fred would tell me, yeah, well, science fiction people love them and like comics. Ray Bradbury always did, Harlan Ellison.
Yeah, the snobs did, yeah.
We should mention that Richard had a partner, Fred Patton, who is, like you say, is at home. Fred Patton brought, I hate to credit Fred for this because I don't like manga, but anyway, he brought manga to America. So we can blame Fred.
He absolutely did. He was the primary researcher.
Yeah.
I don't want to get off, you know, talking about Richard, but I met Richard at that time, a really wonderful time, that he would go to places and hang out with Harlan Ellison and do trivia quizzes. And I lost one with him because he said, what's the name of that elephant in Gunga Din? And I didn't remember it. You know, those sorts of things. I would bump into Ray Bradbury in airport terminals. If we'd pass each other, he stopped and he says, Mike, have you seen the latest adaptation of one of my stories that was published in a comic book? He was always excited about that. Southern California, in 65 to 70, I could pick up the telephone directory. I called Ray Bradbury out of the blue. And I said, I understand you love Prince Valiant and Buck Rogers. He said, yeah, why don't you come over to the house? I go over to Ray's house for 8 hours. You know, look at the book and call up Alex Toth. And he says, come on over to the house. 8 hours. To the chagrin of his wife, I was invited to stay for dinner. And then we watched the Johnny Quest, and he told me funny stories. But there was something about the 60s, and Richard, in many ways, was at the center of that. We all kind of revolved around, and we met people through Richard, and I said earlier, he would encourage us.
Yeah.
And I remember I did some job that drew a thing in a dip or in a Gold Key Digest, and he called me up and he says, I think you're really getting the hang of such and such, and I really like this, and it was better.
And coming from Richard, who I think we all respected as this intellectual giant who was still one of us, it meant a lot. It was a great time.
I have a trivia question for everybody here who knew Richard. In the All in Color for a Dime series for Zero, he did an entire installment on Woody Rogers. It was wonderfully written. When we went to do the anthology, so All in Color for a Dime comic book, he said he did not want a reprint. Now, he had changed his opinion of Woody Rogers or something. Does anyone know the story behind why? That will never be reprinted because he said, no, I don't stand behind that article anymore. So he didn't do that sort of thing much. And any idea as to what was going on?
I think it was 2010, like after Carl Mason died, and I think Fred had a stroke around, I don't know, earlier than that. And I said, Richard, you know, I saw people at the LA County Board of Supervisors. Yeah, they can do like one of those scrolls to honor him and calligraphy. So I wrote up the thing and they helped me edit it and send it in. Then when they did it, they were geniuses. They had his book on manga, you know, where Fred's there watching TV. They used the artwork for that book. I think he did it with Masick, Fred, right? And on Masick's thing from the county, the proclamation, they put the same image. And when I read it to him, because of all the editing that Richard and Dirk played down south, it's on the phone, on the awards and stuff, we're all on the phone, they edited it. They rewrote it perfectly. There must have been anime experts on the staff of the LA County Board of Supervisors.
Interesting piece of trivia.
Anyone else?
Any questions? There'll be a quiz later.
I think the name of the store was perfect.
Richard Talbot.
Well, but didn't he call it Wonder World before that?
Well, yeah, for like a year. I painted the sign, it was all done. I said, wow, this is really nice. A year later, it's painted out. Never pit anything else.
But just to me, it was always Wonder World.
Yeah, but to the world, it was Richard Cobb Books. I don't know why. He just changed the name. Sure. But anyway, it's all right. I'm not bitter.
Go to the mic. We can hear you.
Is that Mexican graphic novel currently available?
No, it's out of print. Kyle was... I don't know who was contacted. For a long time, we thought Metzger wasn't alive, but Jamie said he lived in Canada, and we didn't. I don't know how far Richard got, but they're trying to do it. But on eBay, it was going for like $50 like 5 years ago. I think it's up to $200 or $300. I have like three or four mint conditions. Because when he came to this event, there were new people in our group, and they had left, and he gave me a whole stack of everything, and these people never showed up.
I written to George within the last 2 years, and the thing that intimidates me is he wrote back a multi-page letter, but all hand-printed. So it's like, well, I can type it really fast, and he's taking days apparently writing responses. So it was a wonderful, typical George Metzger response. I was asking him, because, so Don and I did a fanzine called Comic Art, and we never did, our last issue was focused on Karl Barks. But because we published on an announced irregular schedule, it's still technically continuing. And I have a story by George, a cover by Von Bode.
Wow.
And yeah, so I said to George, I came across the original art, which was done on the Bristol board. Did he want it back? What did he want us to do? Because it's one thing to submit something in 1960-something, and for me to still have it. Did he want something different? He said, no, he didn't remember doing it, but I mean, I tried to start up that correspondence again. He is still perfectly coherent, still an artist, still working, having fun in Canada.
Yeah, I talked to him the last time about, I think, 6 months before his stroke. I tried to get you. It was really hard to get these group interviews. I tried to get Phil, Tony Morello, Fred Patton, and Kyle all together for a group interview. And one of the last things that he told me when I was talking to him, I said, did you draw it all? And it was was so weird, so eloquent. Yeah, kind of. And of course, I didn't know if he could draw a little or a lot. Did anybody ever see anything he drew? Was it a secret or a bit?
I never did.
Glenn Ware and Tommy may know. We almost used to work at the store, so I only saw things that he did that were basically like rough sketches equivalent of like a storyboarding. But I couldn't tell you that I saw anything that was a finished work that was, you know, a piece in and of itself. He definitely would break things down graphically and kind of like, you know, think in pictures, so to speak.
There's so many people when we were talking about, you know, the whole history of everything. I mean, the comic co-founders, people like Will Lund and others, and even Dr. Bill Wilson, he just, like I said, to me, it was so similar to George Clayton Johnson. Like, all of these people are very important and a big deal. But like I said before, it's hard to relay how articulate, because I know them like my whole life, and I know a lot of their accomplishments, and they're modest, they don't brag about it or boast. But then he would add something to it. You know, like, what I knew was in lowercase, and when he's explaining to me, it's all uppercase. Any questions? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, I heard of that a lot of the comic artists, you know, they kind of wouldn't say that they were comic artists because it was such a degraded kind of a form. And some of them talked about it, you know, tried to lift the, like the Eisner or Hirschman, but they have a vested interest because they're in the business, right? So they want to be a little bit respected. And Richard Kyle, you know, talked in such an elevated manner. As fans, we were talking about Spider-Man being Batman, you know, he said better than Kirby and stuff like that. And he would just, was there a fandom in there that would talk, you know, people that would discuss things and really at that elevated level, or was he kind of like the only one?
Well, I think Richard had a way of expressing his opinions in the store with lots of people, you know, shopping. We could have back me up with this. And he would just start talking, and then all of a sudden, in the corner, somebody else would start share their opinions. And it was unlike any bookstore I've ever been in anywhere. And it's just like really weird, because you walk into his store and just thoughts would fly out of all corners of the store. So it was really a nice thing, because for those of us in the business, it gave us a sense, oh, comics can be much more than just, you know, these little cheap pieces of paper. You know, this guy was elevating comics to an art form. And I think history has borne out Richard. You know, you can go to any library, any bookstore, anywhere in the world and see these hard cover, you know, expensive, you know, books that we used to call comic books, but now they cost $50.
Any more questions? Anybody else on the panel have anything?
I just was thinking of Harlan, who I also met at the comic convention. Had a lot of crazy people there. And Harlan and wanted to do comics so badly. He was just completely. So finally, he and Larry Todd got an idea, and Harlan did a thing called the Chocolate Alphabet, and Larry illustrated it. And it was wonderful. At some point, I remember how he was so, anybody who knew Harlan, it's like he's a unique creature. Yes. Unique creature. I remember one time he bet me that he could make me the best Mexican chocolate. I said, what do you want to bet? He says, I'll bet my royalties or you double it. I said, what? So somehow we worked it out that I wasn't going to lose any money if I lost the bet, but he did make the best Mexican chocolate. And he was also kind of I'll take a funny thing about Ray Bradbury, the open guy that he was. He and Harlan got along really well, and I was doing a collection of slow death funny stories, and we put it together, best stories out of 6 issues, and we co-published it with Book People, since they were in the book trade, and I didn't really know a lot about the book trade per se, and so our combined companies were called. They had a printing side that they published things under Wingbow, so our combined companies were known as Wingnut, and but so Harlan thought that Ray would give me a good blurb for the book, so I called him up. So, oh, he says, I love the Zap Comics. I love all these things you guys do, blah, 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 blah. So I sent him the copy. Never heard back from him for a while. I said, hey, we got to get this book. He says, are you kidding me? That shit's pornographic. I can't. I says, you said you read all the comic books before. What are you saying? Anyway, just an aside from the Times.
I'll wrap it up.
Publisher in New York found some old paperback books that he did, little funny crime story things, and kind of shot in the dark stuff about evil gang members or whatnot, and he wrote them under different names, but they've been republished. They're all available now. So, like the 60s.
I guess, just to finish up on Richard Cowell, I did know Richard Cowell. He was my pusher. Because I'd go to his shop for my comics. And I would bicycle from Norwalk to Southern Long Beach. And
Jesus.
I've been reminded that that's a long distance, but I was much younger then. It didn't feel like long. And the main thing I can remember is I'd spend 5 minutes shopping for comic books, but I'd spend about an hour speaking with Richard Kyle. And, of course, anyone to shop would join him. And I would say that I learned more about the comic industry, how it works, the way the people in it are from him over my about. I think I went to the store for 5 years till he finally shut it down. And the last thing I remember is him telling me that I am not going to use my damn store as a lure for some big box store to shove me out. And he said, I'll be darned this and that, and I'm going to pack my stuff up, and when I'm ready, I'll reopen my bookstore. But in the meantime, here, he showed me a stack of big, and I can't remember the name of them. I still have them to this day, of old magazines they'd done about the industry, because he just went like, you know, I think you'd like it. I mean, again, that was just a fellow he was. I do miss him, and I really think that we need more people like that who just do it for the love.
And he loved and cared about that.